with Constantine, who still moved more slowly because of his leg. Ridley paused, looking back up at me with concern in his eyes. I nodded my head, motioning for him to go on ahead without me. He let out a heavy sigh, but he left me to argue with Constantine on the side of the hill.
"Why are you fighting with me so hard?"
I asked him in a hushed voice.
"Because you've got to get the fantasy out of your head that you can ride in on a horse like some white knight and vanquish the dragon and save the kingdom," he replied wearily. I stopped.
"I don't have that fantasy."
"You do,"
he insisted, and he stopped so he could look at me. It had started to rain, and it was just above freezing, so the rain felt like ice. We stood on the side of the hill among the trees that smelled of damp pine. The light was fading, thanks to the expanding cloud cover blotting out the setting sun, but I could still see the steel in his eyes.
"There is no such thing as a good war, Bryn," Constantine said. "Good people will die. Innocent lives will be destroyed. And in the end, one unfit person will still hold the crown."
"But Mina is evil, and she needs to be stopped," I argued. "How do you propose we do that without war?"
"She does need to be stopped. And you're correct that this is probably the only way to do it,"
he agreed.
"But that still doesn't make it good, or easy, or bloodless."
Chapter 59. Kingdom of Ice. The flaps to the tent were frozen shut when we awoke, and when I kicked them open with my foot, ice shattered to the ground like broken glass. My tentmate had found herself another place to sleep, and Ridley had taken residence in my tent. Despite our exhaustion, we'd stayed up for a while, trying to concoct a plan to save our families from the worst of this war, but eventually we succumbed to sleep, our bodies pressed together for warmth as the rain beat down on the canvas. While we were sleeping, the temperature had finally dropped enough to freeze, but the rain must have kept on for some time. When we emerged from the tent, the sky was beginning to lighten, casting us in an ethereal blue glow, and everything around was covered in a thick layer of ice. Overnight, the world had turned into a frozen wonderland. Branches were encased in ice, the early buds trapped in crystal tombs. As difficult as it was getting around on the ice, there was something oddly magical about it, the way it changed the landscape completely. Mikko held court in a large round tent, the sides of which now looked like panes of glass. He stood inside, hunched over a table with a map of Doldestam spread out on it, wearing a dark gray fur coat. Someone had made a pot of tea over a fire, and he sipped from a chalice as he studied the map. The large hill kept our armies and the fires mostly hidden from Doldestam, but the Skoyara Tower Guard cloaked any smoke or light that might be visible. Still, the guard's powers weren't very strong, so we kept the fires to a minimum. Ludlow, Finn, and Baltzar were already in with him when Ridley and I arrived. None of them were speaking, so it didn't seem like we'd missed much.
"It's damn early for all this,"
Ludlow muttered, pouring himself a cup of tea. Darkness only lasted for roughly 6 hours this time of year, and the plan before we'd gone to bed was that we wanted to hit Doldestam as close to daybreak as possible. Well, that was the old plan, at least. I was hoping to change it.
"If we go around,"
Finn began to say, but I cut him off and stepped closer to the table.
"Sire, I would like to make a request," I said,
and Mikko slowly lifted his head to look at me.
"I would like it if you waited to launch the assault against Doldestam and allowed myself and a few others to sneak in past the walls so we can get people out before the bloodshed starts."
Mikko straightened up, resting his solemn gaze on me.
"I know that you've grown up here, so you have friends and family to consider. But you can't evacuate half the town, at least not without everybody noticing."
"I'm not asking for half the town," I persisted. "I'm asking to get my parents out, and Ridley wants to get his mother."
I motioned to Finn.
"Finn's parents and sister are there." Mikko's gaze hardened, and though I wanted to go on and on listing people I'd like to get out of there, like Tilda's parents, her sister and brother-in-law, and her 3-year-old niece, or Casper's family, which had already had enough loss, even Linus Burling and his parents, who had been nothing but kind, a rarity among royals. I knew Mikko's fear. I would evacuate the whole town if I could, but that wasn't an option. But I'd be damned if I left my parents trapped behind those walls. Tilda had told me that the town was already turning against them, and I wouldn't let them die there.
"Do you know a way that you can get in without being seen?"
Beltzar asked, his curiosity clearly piqued.
"Yes, we think so."
Ridley moved to the map and tapped on the east side of the wall.
"There's a narrow pipe that drains out to the Hudson Bay. It wouldn't be large enough to sneak an army in, but a few of us should be able to go in undetected." "I would like to get my family out of there," Finn said. "They have no part in this." "I'd like to go too, my lord,"
Constantine said, appearing behind us in the tent, and I turned to look at him.
"I've already had to escape Doldestam once by going out through the sewers. I can get back through them."
Beltzar rubbed his chin, staring down at the spot on the map.
"I would like to see the interior of Doldestam so I can plan my attacks better. But I don't think it's worth the risk."
"You've been looking for a weak spot in the wall,"
Constantine pointed out, walking over to him.
"And it's hard to detect from this distance. If we were inside, I could show you the weakest points, and you can decide where you want to attack."
Beltzar arched an eyebrow.
"That would be invaluable information. Our only way into Doldestam will be by taking down that wall."
"It will only take us an hour, maybe 2, I persisted. "Beltzar could gather information that would give us a great advantage in the war, and then we'll return. We can go to war without anything lost."
"Go then,"
Mikko said, his thunderous voice rumbling with irritation.
"Leave before anybody else decides to join you."
There wasn't time to waste. If we wanted to rescue our families, it would be best to use what little time we had before the sun rose. Just before we left, Constantine stopped me at the bottom of the hill. He held one of his prized daggers, the handle pointed toward me.
"Take it, White Rabbit. It'll come in handy if we run into trouble."
I planned to grab one of the swords from the arsenal, but a dagger would be easier to carry, not to mention that none of the weapons here would be as nice or as strong as Constantine's. "Thank you," I started to say as I tucked it in the back of my waistband, but he'd already turned and started walking up the hill. Climbing back up the hill outside of Doldestam was much harder work than it had been last night, thanks to the ice. Once we reached the peak and looked down below, I had to pause to marvel at the beauty of it. Even in the dim light, the ice made it all sparkle. Every inch of it was frozen. It looked like a kingdom made of crystal. Ridley soundlessly came up beside me, and I didn't even know he was there until he started to speak.
"It's so strange to see the town this way,"
he exhaled deeply, his breath coming out in a plume of white fog.
"I don't just mean the way the ice makes it look like diamonds. From up here, so far away, it looks like a quiet, peaceful little village. You'd have no idea about the lives it holds, or all the dark secrets it's hiding."
"I know," I agreed. "But it really is beautiful." I looked over at Ridley. A strange expression was on his face, somewhere between wistful and pained. But I understood exactly. Because Doldestam made me feel the same way, homesick and angry and scared and happy and terrified. Doldestam was the only home we'd ever really known, and it was home to everyone we'd ever really loved. And we were trying to save it, assuming that it didn't kill us, or that we didn't destroy it in the process. I reached out, taking Ridley's cold hand in mine. He squeezed it, the intensity of his grip promising me that somehow we would be strong enough to take this on.
"Ready to go back home?"
he asked with a crooked smile.
"Are we going? Or are you going to stand up there all day having a chat?"
Constantine called up at us, and he was already a quarter of the way down the hill. I tried to give Ridley a reassuring smile.
Let's go.
Then we were moving again, skidding down the hill and sneaking around the camp. We stuck close to the bay, which put about 4 miles between us and Oldestam. There weren't any trees along the shoreline, but the distance from where the Umta and Victor's men were camped made it nearly impossible for them to see us. Eventually we reached the frozen stream that let water waste flow out from the town. It was in a trough dug 8 feet down, so we were able to walk along it without fear of being seen, assuming, of course, that no one came over and looked in. Underneath the stone wall there was an iron grate to keep people or bears from getting in. Icicles hung from the bars, and Constantin knocked them off. At the ends, where the grate met the wall, he used the handle of his dagger to hammer on the grate until it started to come free. Then, with Ridley's help, he pulled the grate back, creating a gap large enough for someone to slide through. He stepped aside looking at me, and then motioned to the gap.
"Ladies first."
I smiled at him, then squeezed in through the gap and entered Doldestam for the first time in almost a month. Chapter 60. Burial. We came up in the cemetery. There were other access points, Constantin explained, but most of them led into highly visible areas. This would be the least conspicuous place to climb up out of a sewer grate. The cemetery was a narrow rectangle a few blocks from the center of town. Evergreen hedges created a living fence around the outside of it, providing us with some much-needed cover. Thick, dark, deciduous trees surrounded us, and their branches came together overhead, creating a canopy. In the summer, they bloomed brightly with flowers, but now icicles hung down from them, like diamond ornaments. Almost hidden in the dim light, I saw a bearded vulture perched on one of the branches. It cocked its head, its sharp eyes locked on me. I held my breath, waiting for it to cackle and give away our position, but it only watched us before taking flight. 4 large mausoleums sat in the center of the cemetery, pointing to each of the 4 directions, and the royal family and high-ranking Marquis and Marquesina were buried within them. Since plots were scarce, most people had burials at the bay. What few spaces were left were usually reserved for Doetsvall, or a hero's death, someone who died in service to the kingdom. We crept along, keeping our heads low in case guards were patrolling nearby. Then Ridley stopped short, causing me to run into him. Constantin was leading the way, weaving through headstones, with Balthazar and Finn following close behind. I was about to ask Ridley why he'd stopped, but then I looked to see what he was staring at. It was a headstone, broken in half. The bloody carcass of a fish with its guts hanging out had been left on the stone, the blood and entrails frozen to the granite. Even though it was broken, I could still make out most of the words, and I filled in the rest. Reinhard Mikhail Dresden, 1963 to 1999, hero to the king, beloved father and husband. Ridley's father had been killed protecting the king during Victor Doleg's revolt. He'd been revered as a hero, until Ridley had defected from Doldestam, and now, based on the dead fish, they were punishing Reinhard for Ridley's assumed loyalties to the Skoyara. To me. I put my hand on his arm and whispered, "I'm so sorry." His jaw was set, and his eyes were hard. Then he shook his head once.
"We just need to get out of here."
He turned and walked away. I wanted to right the stone and clean off the frozen blood, but we really didn't have time. And what would it matter if we did? The damage had already been done. When we reached the edge of the cemetery, Constantin, Balthazar, and Finn were long gone. I knew that Finn would go after his family, but I had no idea what Constantin and Balthazar might be up to. Crouching beside the hedges, Ridley whispered that we should split up. He'd go get his mom, while I got my parents. It seemed like the safest bet to get us out of here the fastest, so he kissed me briefly on the lips, then turned and darted in the opposite direction, while I dashed across the icy cobblestone streets toward the town square. I was just thinking about how nice it was that I had yet to see a guard when I caught sight of two massive Umta soldiers marching right in my direction. I ducked into a narrow gap between two houses, just barely big enough to fit my body in sideways, and I started sliding through. In the middle, it started feeling very tight on my ribs, and I had to hold my breath so I could squeeze by. When I poked my head out on the other side, I saw a member of the Hug Dragon patrolling at the end of the block, only three doors down from my parents' house. He kept going back and forth, walking the same beat. He'd disappear for about 10 seconds, then he'd return. I was not his commanding officer, but I knew for certain that he was supposed to be patrolling a larger area. But thanks to him being a lazy idiot, he was making it much harder for me to get to my parents' house. By my count, I had 20 seconds to run down to my parents. Since I had no choice, I made a break for it, running on the ice much faster than I should. When I tried to stop, I almost slid past their cottage, and I actually had to grab onto the side of it. Just in the nick of time, I jumped into the gap between my parents' house and their neighbors. Above the kitchen sink was a useless window. Well, my mom had always called it useless because it only gave her a view of the neighbor's wall. But today it was going to prove itself not useless as I jimmied it open and climbed inside. I managed to squeeze in by grabbing onto the kitchen sink and pulling myself through. I'd been hoping for a more elegant landing, but I ended up tumbling headfirst onto the floor, knocking a few glasses down with me. It was enough commotion to wake my parents, and the upstairs light clicked on. I'd just gotten to my feet by the time my dad came rushing down the stairs in his pajamas with his hair sticking up all over the place. He'd never been much for weapons, so he was wielding an antique Scandinavian sword that he'd gotten because of its historical value.
"I'm not afraid to kill you little punks,"
Dad growled, and flicked on the kitchen light. "Dad, it's me." I pushed back my hood so he could actually get a look at me, and he nearly dropped his sword in shock.
"Oh, my, Bryn."
He just stood there staring at me for a moment. Then he finally did drop the sword and ran over to me.
"Ivor?" Mom called from upstairs. "Ivor? Is everything okay?"
"Runa, get down here,"
Dad said, while giving me such a bear hug, I thought he might actually break me. But I hugged him back just as tight.
"Ivor?"
Mom asked cautiously. But then she must have seen me because I heard her gasp. By the time she'd reached me, she was already crying, and I let go of my dad with one arm so I could pull her into the hug.
"Oh, Bryn, we weren't sure if we'd ever see you again," she said between sobs.
"I know, I know." I finally pulled away from them. "I love you, and I missed you guys too. But we can talk about all that later. Right now, we have to get out of here." Mom nodded, wiping at her eyes.
"I've got my bag ready. We've been waiting for our chance to escape. Just let me put on real clothes."
Chapter 61. Liberate. Getting out of my parents' house had been much easier than getting in. I didn't have a key, so I'd had to break in, but now we were safe to sneak out the back door. Behind their house was a very small yard, a tiny strip of frozen grass separated by worn wooden fences. In the summer, my mom kept a garden there, and several of their neighbors kept chickens. Most of the fences weren't very high, which was fortunate, since my dad had trouble jumping them as it was. Dad had always been more of an intellectual, and Mom fared much better at athletics than him, so she had no problem leaping over the fences. We went down through the yards until we found two houses that appeared to be the farthest apart. Some of the spaces between houses were mere inches, but this gap was several feet. It was still tight to get through, especially with my parents' overstuffed rucksack, but it was much easier than the gap I'd used earlier. From there, it was just a few mad dashes across the streets when guards weren't looking and hiding behind whatever was available. I led my mom and dad through the cemetery, around all the headstones, and as we got closer to our exit, I could see that Finn had beaten us there. He was helping ease his mother down through the open hole. There wasn't a ladder down into the tunnel, so it was just a straight 8-foot drop to the bottom. He held Annalie's hands, slowly lowering her down to his father, who put his hands on her waist and set her carefully on the ground. I peered down into the hole, excited to see Ember after all this time, but she was conspicuously absent. Only Finn's parents waited in the tunnel.
"Where's Ember?"
I whispered.
"She didn't come,"
he said in a low grunt.
"What do you mean she didn't come?"
I pressed. Finn gave me a hard look.
"I'm not going over this again. I barely managed to convince my parents to leave without her by telling them that their grandkids needed them. Ember refused to leave, and that's all there is to it."
That was apparently all he would say on the matter, because then he crouched, grabbing onto the edges of the hole, and dropped down into the sewer. I motioned for my dad to go next, and Finn and his father helped him. He landed with a bit of a clunk, but he wasn't any worse for the wear. Once he was standing, I helped lower my mom down. I waited until she was safely on the tunnel floor. Above me, the sky was starting to lighten even more, and though I couldn't see it from where I sat crouched in the cemetery, I knew the sun had started its ascent above the horizon. My parents had taken longer to get ready and get their things than I would have liked, but they were running away from the life they'd spent the past 20 years building. I couldn't blame them.
"Bryn, come on,"
my mom said, staring up at me.
"Your dad and I will help you down."
"I have to go back and get Ember," I told her.
"You go on with Finn and his parents. He'll take you back to camp." "Bryn!"
Mom nearly shouted, her voice cracking in desperation.
"I'm not leaving without you."
"Mom, go," I told her. "I'll be fine. I have to do this. You and Dad need to get to safety."
"Bryn,"
Dad said, pleading with me to go with them. But I couldn't be persuaded.
"I gotta go. I love you guys. Stay safe."
I placed the grate back over the hole, and my mom said my name again. But I didn't stay to hear more. Since Ember had moved to Doldestam over 4 years ago, she'd instantly become one of my closest friends. She'd always had my back, even sometimes when no one else did. Because she was a couple years younger than me, I'd always kind of thought of her as a little sister. I was an only child, and her brother lived so far away, so we'd made each other family. I wouldn't leave her here to die. I didn't know what Finn had done to try to convince her, but I would drag Ember out of here kicking and screaming if I had to. The good thing was that Ember lived on the far east side of town where the poorer people lived, and that meant that guards weren't patrolling it so hard. The east also faced the bay, and the guards probably weren't counting on an attack from the water. On the last half of my dash across town to Ember's farm, I didn't see a single guard. That made getting there much easier. I hopped the fence into the goat yard and ran over to her house. The exterior had dark wood beams that ran along the outside, both for decoration and for support. Using the beams, I managed to climb up until I could reach the balcony that extended from her second story. That was far harder than it sounded, since everything had that nice layer of ice on it. I grabbed the metal railing and hoisted myself up. For a moment, I just lay on the balcony on my back, catching my breath and staring up at the fading stars. But then I was up, jamming open the French doors and pushing my way inside Ember's house. I just stepped through the doors and was about to say her name when I felt a hard punch slamming into my jaw, knocking me to the floor. Chapter 62. Reunion.
"Oh, Bryn! Oh, my gosh! I'm so sorry!"
Ember pounced on me, hugging me while I was lying stunned on the floor.
"I thought you were a guard that caught my parents leaving."
"No, it's just me." She sat back on her knees so I could sit up, and I rubbed my jaw where she'd hit me. Then I just stared at her. It seemed so unreal to be seeing her again. Her wide eyes were so dark they were nearly black, and her bangs landed just above them. Her long chestnut hair hung over her shoulder in a thick braid. She wore shabby leggings and a patterned long-sleeve thermal shirt, and I felt a tad envious knowing that she'd slept in a nice bed in a warm house while I was out sleeping in the storm. Her mouth spread into a toothy grin.
"I can't believe it's really you!"
"I know. It's crazy." We'd been apart for long periods of time before. I'd gone on missions tracking changelings, and so had she. But this time it felt different. So much had happened, and neither of us was sure that we'd ever see each other again. And then, since she couldn't contain herself, Ember hugged me again. And this time I was able to hug her back.
"I'm not going with you,"
she said softly, still hugging me. I let go and pulled back.
"What? Why the hell not?"
"I can't," she shook her head.
"I don't have time to explain it all, but I can't. I have to stay here and help the people that are left behind."
"Ember, you're being ridiculous. Did Finn tell you about all the soldiers we have stationed out beyond the hill?" I asked. "It's going to be brutal here. You could die."
"I know, I do. But that's exactly why I have to stay," she said with a sad smile. "I can't leave everyone defenseless. Tilda and Casper's families are still here, not to mention Junie Skold, Simon Bolin and Linus Burling, and so many other of our friends."
She paused.
"I won't leave Delilah."
"Delilah?" I asked. And then I remembered. The Marcusina whom Ember had been training with before. When I'd still been here, it had only seemed like a flirtation. But by the conviction I heard in Ember's voice, I guessed that their relationship had turned into something more.
"Ember, you can't risk your life for someone like this. You need to do what you must to survive. That's what Delilah would want if she really cares about you."
"Of course I can, and I will," Ember replied simply. "I love her."
"That's great, but I don't expect you to understand. I know that you'd never sacrifice anything for love," she said, sounding almost as if she pitied me. "For honor, for loyalty, for the kingdom, you'd give up anything. But love, you never had time for that."
Her words stung, probably harder than she'd meant them to, like a knife cutting straight through my heart. I wanted to argue with her, to tell her that I loved, that I loved very deeply, and not just her and Tilda and my parents, but Ridley and Constantine. It wasn't that I didn't have time for love, or that I wouldn't sacrifice for it. I had just been so afraid that I would lose myself and my place in the world, the way my mom had, the way Ember's mom had, and the way I had seen so many other women do before her. I refused to be sidelined by romance. But when it came down to it, I would give anything for love. I would lay my life down for Ridley if it meant I could spare him pain. That's when I realized there was no point in arguing with Ember. Just as no one would be able to change my mind when it came to protecting those that I cared about, I wouldn't be able to change hers. Besides, Ember was nothing if not stubborn and loyal. "You have to be careful," I told her finally. "All hell is going to break loose here."
"I know. You should go, before they start noticing that people are missing," Ember said.
Then she suddenly exclaimed and jumped to her feet.
"You're here!"
"Yeah?" I stared up uncertainly. "I've been here for a couple minutes."
"No, I mean, just wait."
She turned and dashed back into her bedroom. A few seconds later, she came back carrying a handful of envelopes.
"You can read these."
I took them from her, and as I flipped through them, I saw that Bryn had been handwritten on each one. "What are these?"
"I wrote to you while you were gone, but I didn't mail them because I'd no idea where to send them."
She stood with her arms folded over her chest.
"Also, the Hug Dragon are checking all the mail going in and out, so that wouldn't have gone over well."
"Thanks, Ember." I stood up. "That was really nice of you." She shrugged.
"I missed you, and it was the only way I could talk to you."
"I missed you, too." I smiled at her, and I tucked the letters in the back of my pants next to the dagger, safely protected from the elements. "But I should go now."
"I don't know when I'll see you again," Ember said,
and there was a hesitance on the word when, since it really should have been if. "Take care."
"You too."
I walked out of her house onto the balcony. I hung over the edge and then dropped down carefully into the yard. I took a step backward and looked up to watch Ember closing the French doors. Then I turned around and ran right smack into Ridley, who smartly put his hand over my mouth to prevent me from screaming.
"What are you doing here?"
I hissed when he removed his hand.
"Looking for you. Finn told me you went back to get Ember, and I didn't want to leave you behind."
"What about your mom?" I asked.
"Finn is taking her out with the rest of the parents," he explained.
"Where's Ember?"
I shook my head.
"She's not coming."
He didn't press any further, and it was for the best. "Do you have any idea where Konstantin and Baltzar went?"
"All I know is that Konstantin was trying to show Baltzar weak points in the town."
We hopped the fence out of the yard and started the trek back to the cemetery. We cut through alleys and backyards, taking much the same road I had on the way to Ember's house. But it was starting to get brighter out, and we no longer had darkness to help cloak us. It had begun to snow, heavy wet flakes, and while it was only a flurry now, it felt like it could take a harder turn. 2 blocks from the cemetery we paused, waiting in an alley. An Umta soldier was patrolling the street, and Ridley stood with his back pressed against the nearest house, craning his neck around to watch the soldier. I crouched down beside him, trying to get a better look. Both of us were so focused on the Umta soldier in front of us that we didn't notice anyone creeping up behind us. Until I heard Helga Utak's gravelly voice say,
"Well, isn't this a nice surprise?"
Chapter 63. Overtaken. Helga Utak was the viceroy to the Umta Queen, and while that sounded like a cushy job, Helga looked more like an old biker than a politician. His leathery skin showed signs of 100 bar fights, and his scraggly hair hung past his shoulders. Even under the thick brown winter coat he wore, it was still obvious that Helga himself was a large man. He easily towered over us, making him appear strong by human standards, and he had the Umta strength to boot. When he grinned down at us, I realized that 2 of his front teeth had been replaced with gold caps, but that was really all I had time to notice, because then Helga was moving. Before either of us could act, Helga grabbed Ridley. Ridley tried to fight him off, hitting and kicking him any way he could, but it was futile. Helga wrapped one arm across Ridley's throat and grabbed his hair with the other hand. Ridley clung on to his arm as Helga lifted him from the ground. I pulled the dagger from the back of my pants and held it out toward him, not that I knew what to do to stop him. Helga clicked his tongue at me.
"Think carefully before you move with that knife, little girl. How long do you think it will take you to reach me? 1 second? 2? Because I can have your friend's neck snapped in half that."
"Just let him go," I said, watching Ridley struggle against Helga.
"You don't want him. You want me. I'm the one that made the Queen's most wanted list."
"Maybe so. But who says I can't have you both?"
Helga grinned, and I heard a growl behind me. I glanced over my shoulder to see a giant Umta soldier standing a few feet back at the opening of the alley. I turned again to Helga and kept my eyes on Ridley as my mind raced, trying to decide what to do. I could hear heavy footfalls as the Umta stepped closer behind me, and I waited, gauging his movements until I thought he was right behind me. Then, in one fell swoop, I crouched and whirled around. I raised the dagger up quickly, jabbing underneath the jaw and straight up through the head of the Umta. His blood ran warm over my hand, and when I yanked the blade out, it made a sickening wet sound. The body collapsed to the ground, and that should have been a relief, except there was another Umta guard standing right behind him. He saw what I'd just done to his friend, and he did not look happy about it. He growled and lowered his head like he meant to charge at me, but just before he did, I saw movement to his left. An arm cloaked in a black jacket was wielding a long sword, and with the guard's eyes still locked on me, the sword sliced through his neck, decapitating him. Baltzar stepped into the alleyway, holding his bloodied sword, and Konstantin pushed past him. He grabbed my arm, yanking me away. I looked back over my shoulder at a grinning Helga holding Ridley hostage. "Helga has Ridley," I said, trying to pull away from Konstantin.
"Helga also has guards coming. We can't fight them all, and we need to go before they get here,"
Konstantin said, still dragging me. I tried to dig my feet in, but the ice kept making them slip. "They'll kill him," I insisted, barely able to keep myself from shouting, but I couldn't draw further attention to us. Konstantin stopped long enough to turn on me.
"No, they won't. Not yet. Mina will use him as bait. Let her."
I wanted to protest further, because it killed me to leave Ridley. And even though I knew Konstantin had a point, it felt like too great a risk. Still hanging onto my arm, he broke the door in to a public outhouse. He went inside and kicked out the wooden base for the toilet. We couldn't risk being seen, which meant that we couldn't go back to the cemetery. So this would have to do. Baltzar jumped in first, but I waited a moment longer. Konstantin put his hands on my face, forcing me to look up at him.
"You can't save him if you're dead," he said roughly. "But I won't make you come with me. This is your choice."
He jumped down through the hole, and I looked back, as if I could somehow still see Ridley. I realized painfully that if Helga was going to kill Ridley, he would already be dead. Helga would have snapped his neck the second we walked away so he could go round up more of his guards. It was either already too late, or I needed to get out of here if I wanted to come back with a rescue team. I closed the outhouse door, making it a bit more difficult for the guards to figure out where we'd gone, and I jumped down after Konstantin and ran after him through the sewers. Chapter 64. Tempest. By the time we made it back to our camp, the snow was coming fast and heavy, creating whiteout conditions. The wind had picked up, officially turning it into a late spring blizzard. They were rare for Doldestam, but not unheard of, and it started to feel like even the weather was against us. My mom was waiting at the bottom of the hill for us to return. Finn and the families had arrived at camp before Konstantin, Baltzar, and I, even though we'd run most of the way back. I didn't know if Konstantin's leg was still bothering him, but he pushed himself on it just as fast as Baltzar and I. Mom hugged me as soon as she saw me, but I just stood stiffly and didn't embrace her in return. Through the thick snowflakes, I saw Konstantin and Baltzar heading toward the king's tent, so I untangled myself from my mom and ran after them.
"If it keeps up like this, the men won't be able to see any of us commanding them,"
Ludlow was telling Mikko when I pushed my way into his tent. Snow came up behind me, forming a drift in his doorway. Mikko stood on the opposite side of the table while his advisors, Finn and Ludlow, stood across from him. Baltzar moved up to take his place beside Ludlow, while Konstantin lingered by the entrance.
"As much as it pains me to say so, I agree," Finn said. "We should wait until the storm dies to make our move. We can't properly give orders or create a formation if we can't see anything."
"We can't wait. We need to go in and get Ridley." I stepped forward, but Konstantin put his arm out, blocking me and holding me back. Mikko cast his severe gaze on me.
"What's become of Ridley Dresden?"
"Give me a minute with Bryn," Konstantin said. "Baltzar, fill the king in."
Baltzar cleared his throat.
"The Umta surprised Ridley and Bryn as they were retreating."
I didn't hear anything he said beyond that because Konstantin had started pushing me out of the tent. When I tried to resist, he put his arm around my waist and carried me away.
"Put me down! What are you doing?"
I demanded. But I didn't really fight him. After everything that had happened that morning, I didn't have the strength to defy him on things that weren't life or death. He set me down once we'd gotten far enough from the king's tent and the campsite that we could have some privacy. Bright white snow swirled around us, getting caught in his raven curls and eyelashes.
"I'm saving your ass,"
Konstantin said finally.
"How is that saving me?"
I shot back. "You were about to go in there and demand the king send a rescue mission after Ridley, even though you know that's suicide. Look around.
He gestured to the growing snowstorm.
We can't conduct our men in this. Not if we want to win the war. And a rescue mission would only get us caught. Right now, Mina only knows about me, you, Ridley, and Baltzar,
he explained.
She already knew you, me, and Ridley were working together, and she'll likely assume that Baltzar is just someone else we picked up along the way. Even capturing Ridley, she hasn't found out anything new. But this army,
he pointed back to the campsite,
that's news to her. And if we go in with the kind of team we'd need to rescue Ridley, she'll figure out that we have a lot more muscle behind us.
He stepped closer to me, his gray eyes locked on mine.
Right now she has no clue what we're really up to, and we can't let her find out until it's too late.
I wanted to argue with him. I wanted to grab bigger weapons and gather all the men I could and storm the palace, tearing it apart until I found Ridley. But no matter how much the truth hurt, I knew Constantin was right.
I know it's hard setting your feelings aside to do the right thing.
He smiled bitterly.
Believe me, I know better than anyone. But you can't let your feelings for Ridley or for anyone cloud your judgment right now.
He paused, still looking down at me.
We need you, Bryn.
I breathed in deeply, relishing the way the cold air stung my throat and lungs as snowflakes melted on my cheeks. I can't leave him there for very long, I said thickly.
She won't kill him,
Constantin assured me, and with a gloved hand, he gingerly wiped away the melting snowflakes from my face.
Not yet. She'll want to find out everything she can from him, and then she wants us to fall into a trap trying to rescue him. Ridley is strong and smart, and he's still alive. I promise you that.
I lowered my eyes. He came back for me. It's all my fault.
It is not your fault,
Constantin growled in anger, startling me into looking up at him.
Ridley chose to go back, and he wasn't paying attention in that alley either. You can't always take the blame for everything, Bryn. Sometimes bad things happen for no reason, and sometimes they happen because other people fucked up. It's not always on you.
He sighed.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to yell at you.
No, it's okay. I think I needed to hear it. I brushed my hair back from my face. So, what do we do now?
You should go get your parents settled in. The snow will have us hunkered down for a while.
He squinted into the oncoming storm.
Things are only going to get worse before they get better.
I wasn't sure if he was talking about the storm or the war, but it was true either way. Chapter 65. Disturbance. The tent was sagging low on me again, and I knew I would have to go out and scrape off the snow soon before it collapsed on me entirely. The batteries were going out in the little electric lamp, making it flicker dimly, but I tried to ignore that. I lay on my back with one arm underneath my head, buried under my sleeping bag, with Ember's letters spread out around me. The snow hadn't let up yet, so the rest of the camp had gone to bed. Everyone else around me was probably sleeping, but every time I tried to close my eyes, all I could think about was how last night Ridley and I slept curled up against each other, and tonight he was being held in Mina's torture chamber, the very last place on earth he wanted to be. So I lay awake, reading through Ember's letters over and over again. It was my fifth time through reading her final letter, and it still made my stomach twist in knots. To read about how Doldestam had slowly collapsed, becoming a twisted dictatorship under the harsh rule of a paranoid madwoman. It also made me realize how much I'd missed out on in Ember's life, and Tilda's, my parents, and Ridley's. So much had befallen them, and I hadn't been able to help them with any of it.
I also missed Ember terribly. She had been shouldering such a heavy burden these past few weeks, with Tilda reeling from Casper's death and Ridley dealing with the trauma of Mina's torture. Not to mention that Ember had taken time out to check on my parents when nobody else would, and all the other trackers and royals she was trying to train so they could protect themselves. I wished I'd been able to talk to her more, and couldn't wait for the day when this was all over so I could thank her for everything she'd done and tell her how proud of her I was. Putting her letter down, I let myself indulge in a fantasy for a moment. One where there would be peace again, and Tilda, Ember, and I could go out together for a few glasses of wine the way we had before, and when I'd finished, I could go home and curl up with Ridley. Even though it hurt to think of Ridley, I couldn't help myself. I closed my eyes, remembering the feel of his skin against mine and the safety of his arms. But it hurt too much. So I moved the thoughts along, trying to think of all the other things I would do when this was over. Like taking Bloom for a very long ride, and having dinner with my parents and asking my mom to make her gooseberry pie for me. And Constantine would... The thought of Constantine jarred me out of the daydream. We'd grown close, and he'd definitely become someone I could rely on. When this was all over, I did want him to be a part of my life still. But I realized painfully that I had no idea where he would fit in it. A scuffle outside brought me from my thoughts, and I grabbed the dagger from where it sat beside me. I opened the flap, pushing back the foot of snow that had built up around the tent since the last time I'd cleared it away. Next to the king's tent, a campfire burned, and it cast enough light that I could see two guards dragging someone toward the large tent.
"Let me go," a woman insisted. "You've got it all wrong."
The guards didn't listen, so she broke free. With a few well-placed punches, she had knocked them both to the ground, and the ease of her fighting immediately made me think Umta. I jumped out of the tent, wielding my dagger, ready to stop any Umta who dared come into our camp. She stood over the guards with her back to me, snow clinging to her dark hair and fur-lined jacket. When she turned around, I got a good look at her for the first time, and I recognized her. In her late 20s and beautiful, especially for an Umta, she had the face of a warrior, with determined dark eyes and smooth olive skin.
"Beck Valen," I said,
but I didn't lower my dagger. When Constantine and I had been to Fulatrask, she had been kind to us, and even helped save us from the wrath of an ogre. But she had been a queen's guard, and now she was sneaking into our base camp, so things didn't look good.
"Brynhaven!"
Beck sounded just as surprised to see me as I was to see her, but relief washed over her face.
"I was trying to tell the guards, but they wouldn't listen to me. I came here to help you."
I narrowed my eyes.
"Why should I believe you?" "Helga Utek betrayed our queen and our kingdom. He's dragged us into a war that we have no place in, all for a few gemstones."
She wrinkled her nose in disgust.
"He sold out our entire tribe. Queen Bodil doesn't see it yet, but I do. And I won't continue to do their bidding."
"So you're saying that you want to fight on our side?" I lowered my dagger a bit, and she nodded.
"I want to fight with whoever is going to kill Helga," she replied coolly. "And I'll help you however I can."
"I think I should take you to see King Mikko, and I'll let him decide what to do with you." She nodded.
"That only sounds fair."
Chapter 66. Dialogue. Mikko pushed in the canvas door to the round tent that had been used for playing our strategy, his long silver fur robe dragging on the ground behind him. Baltzar and Finn followed. I'd gotten his footmen to wake him, and he'd apparently decided to wake Baltzar and Finn too, but that was just as well. Beck and I had been standing by his table, warming ourselves by the thick pillar candles that covered it. As soon as he came and eyed up Beck, his mouth turned down into a deep scowl.
"I thought we decided we're taking no prisoners."
"I'm not a prisoner,"
Beck said fiercely and stepped back from the table. I put my hand on her arm in an attempt to calm her,
and even through the thick leather of her jacket, I could feel her thick muscles coiled. She could take us all out if she wanted to.
She came here voluntarily to talk, I interjected hurriedly.
What does she have to talk about?
Baltzar asked, eyeing her with the same suspicion as Mikko.
Why don't you ask me yourself?
Beck shot back, and I was beginning to wonder if bringing her had been a bad idea.
All right.
Mikko took a deep breath, and his broad shoulders relaxed a bit as he attempted to start over from a less offensive position.
If you came into our camp tonight, risking a great deal, you must have something valuable to tell us.
Beck responded by relaxing herself.
I do. I came to tell you about Helga Utek. He duped Queen Bodil, and he's been working with Victor Doleg. He's helped orchestrate the whole thing.
Mikko's brow furrowed.
Helga Utek? I don't think I'm familiar with him.
He's the viceroy to the Umta, I said, and I bit my tongue to keep from adding that he was the bastard who was holding Ridley hostage.
The Umta are working for the Canon and Victor Doleg. We all know that.
Baltzar shrugged.
How is this exciting news to us?
Beck glared at him, her amber eyes seeming to blaze in the candlelight.
Helga helped orchestrate this whole thing. For over a year, Helga has been getting the strongest members of the Umta tribe exiled on the tiniest infractions, then passing them along to Victor for his army.
Why would Helga do that? Finn asked.
Victor traded our men for a few sapphires. Helga has been selling off our tribe bit by bit for a few lousy blue rocks.
Beck shook her head in disbelief.
He even sent off the queen's own nephew, and he got killed running errands for Victor.
The queen's nephew was Bent Stumm. From what I'd gathered from Constantin, shortly after Bent had been exiled, he joined up with Victor and was immediately paired with Constantin to track down changelings. Victor had brought Bent to help ensure that Constantin would do his job.
How do you know all this?
Mikko asked.
I'm not saying I doubt your story, but I can't imagine that Helga just confessed this all to you himself.
I've never trusted Helga, but I started putting it together when we arrived in Doldestam and I met Victor Doleg,
Beck explained.
I realized it wasn't the first time I'd seen him. He'd been sneaking around Fulatrask before, whispering with Helga in the hallways of the palace. But last night I overheard Helga and Victor talking and laughing about how their plans were coming together.
Her lip curled in disgust.
They didn't even care if anybody overheard anymore. They think they've won already. That Victor will be the king of the Canon, and Helga will be the king of the Umta. And then they will take out the rest of you, until the tribes and all your jewels are theirs. That's why I came here, she finished. I can't let that happen. I'd rather see the entire Umta kingdom destroyed than those two bastards win.
Mikko stared at the floor, his hands on his hips as he breathed in deeply through his nose. Baltzar and Finn exchanged a look, one that appeared as if they'd just realized they were in deeper shit than they'd originally thought.
Thank you for coming here with this,
Mikko said finally, and he lifted his head to look at Beck.
What you have said is interesting, perhaps even valuable information, but it won't help us win this war or defeat Helga Utek or Victor Doleg.
How about this, then? Beck challenged him. The Hug Dragon and Cannon soldiers are inside the walls at night. If you want to avoid the Cannon, attack at first light. It will only be Umta and Victor's men on the outside.
Mikko nodded once.
Now that might actually help.
Mikko, Baltzar, and Finn began talking among themselves, coming up with a revised battle plan. When it became apparent that Beck and I were no longer needed, Baltzar told us that we should go rest as much as we could.
Thank you for bringing me to them, Beck said as we walked back to my tent.
I didn't know where else to put her, and it would be good if we could get some sleep tonight. Well, thank you for helping us, I said. Then I stopped to look at her.
I do just have one favor that I'd like to ask.
She cocked her head, appraising me.
You've got balls so big they'd make an ogre jealous. Whatever you want, I'm game.
Chapter 67 Battle Cry. The snow came up past our knees, but we marched on down the hill toward Doldasam. Mikko led the way, with each of the captains leading their respective armies. Baltzar headed the Skoyara, Finn the Trill, and Ludlow the Vitra. Konstantin, Beck, and I had no real allegiance, so we simply walked near the front, following Mikko's long strides through the drifts. This time, since I wasn't sneaking around the town, I'd gone for a Skoyara sword made of Damascus steel. Before dawn even broke, we had started our descent down the hill. Most of the Umta were sleeping, and we'd nearly reached them before one of them caught sight of us and sounded the alarm. Within moments, the Umta were in formation. Mikko yelled his battle cry, and the war officially began. I had a very singular plan, to get to the wall. I didn't want to be slowed down by fighting, but I would plow through anyone who stood in my way. Beck had agreed to help me, and she quickly proved herself to be an amazing ally, knocking a giant ogre out of my way. I'd drawn my sword, and I sliced through anyone who came at me. An Umta wielding an axe, I cut off his head. A scraggly ex-cannon-looking guy with two swords, I cut off one hand and then stabbed him through the chest. I didn't think about what I was doing. I just moved on instinct, jumping over bodies and broken tents. The Umta had been living here for days, and bones littered the ground. It was a mess of garbage, rotting food, and expired campfires. It was like an obstacle course, but with murderous maniacs charging at me. Bearded vultures circled above us, squawking their rage. All around me, I heard people crying out in pain. I saw a Skoyara soldier fall to the ground, bleeding profusely from his neck. But my mission was clear, and I couldn't save him, so I charged on. Beck stayed near me the entire way, stabbing or punching anyone who got too close. By the time we'd reached the wall, both of us were covered in blood. So far, none of it was our own, but that was bound to change. I sheathed my sword and stared up the wall. It was still slippery from the ice and snow, and with all the fighting going on around us, it would be an impossible climb.
"Ready?"
Beck asked, right after stabbing a man through the head who had come running at us. "Yeah, I'd better be," I said. She grabbed me by the back of my jacket and the waistband of my pants, and with a grunt, she swung me back and then tossed me up. I flew into the top of the wall, with it hitting me right at the waist. I started to slip down, so I hurried to get a foothold. With my arms, I brushed the snow out of my way and finally managed to get a grip on the wall and hoist myself up onto it. I looked back down at Beck and gave her a thumbs up. She smiled and proceeded to punch someone so hard that his face actually caved in. I'd never seen anything like it, and I hoped I never would again. We were incredibly fortunate that she was on our side. Then I stood up and turned my attention toward Doldasam. Since the Umta had sounded the alarm, the Hug Dragon and cannon soldiers were filling the streets. I was near the palace, which was where most of them were running to protect the queen.
"People of Cannon!"
I shouted as loud as I could. The sounds of the battle were raging on behind me, but thankfully, the walls had a somewhat dampening effect.
"Listen to me!"
Some of the people were still running around, but many looked up at me. I wasn't wearing a hood. I made no attempt to hide who I was, because I wanted them to know.
"Mina is not your true queen," I yelled. "You have been deceived. She killed your king. She's lying to you because she is Victor Doleg's daughter."
Some of the soldiers, and even the panicked townspeople, gasped. Others were skeptical, but I knew they would be. I knew I couldn't reach all of them, but I hoped I could reach some. Beneath me, the wall began to shake, and I glanced behind me to see that the Vitra hobgoblins had started going at it with an iron battering ram. They were knocking down the wall to make an entrance for our army. The fight was still raging behind them, with the Skoyara and their allies trying to take out as many of Victor's men and the Umta as they could. Bodies littered the ground, blood staining the fresh snow,